Hello and welcome to the podcast. On today's episode, Jason and I sit down and we review the last couple of podcast episodes where we interviewed Congressman Buddy Carter and Mayor Karen Williams. Then we jump right into the headlines, where we dive deep on some truly troubling topics. Finally, we tease you a little bit about the upcoming episodes in this season, season 4. Are you ready for this vital conversation? Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to the podcast, to season 4. And I know you're probably going, well, wait, we already have 2 episodes of season 4. We've already listened to 2 episodes of season 4. Yes, you have. We're doing things a little bit different this year. So, but welcome back, everybody. We're really happy to have you here. And I'm sitting here with my partner in crime, my Lucille to my Ricky, Jason Crosby.
Lucille. Wow, I'm going to call Lucille Ball. Okay. No, that worked. Hey, Aaron. Hey, everybody.
Hey, that's a callback there.
You know it is. I like it. Hey, yeah, unique perspective. We wanted to try something new for season 4, didn't we? And I like how we started with a couple of episodes. And now we're kind of taking a breather and introducing the rest of the lineup. So hopefully the new format is something folks will like.
Speaking of our first 2 episodes, I want to talk about them a little bit because even though I was there for them, I really enjoyed this format. It was a little bit different. And in one case, we were actually live. Some folks may have noticed the audio sounded a little bit different than it normally does because we actually went on site. We went to City Hall to talk to Mayor Williams. But Jason, I guess to interview you a little bit, what's kind of some of your key takeaways, particularly from Congressman Carter's or Mayor Williams's interviews?
Yeah. First of all, they both were just so welcoming to the conversation, which we haven't had with them before. And so just as new folks that we got a chance to speak with, but their perspectives, right? First of all, Congressman Carter, having come from Pooler, having served as mayor of Pooler, being a pharmacist, being a business owner, all those kinds of perspectives, and a lot of the legislation he's kind of been involved with of late, I thought was just a very unique perspective versus just a legislative update or, you know, someone that's in the industry. So I really enjoyed the time, which was an open time. He was very welcoming. And so very much appreciate him and his staff accommodating us on that. And so very much like that perspective. And then to your point about Mayor Williams, same thing. First one we did on site. I felt like I was in your house there at City Hall. I know you spend a day or two there, not too much. So that was just fun. But Mayor Williams, who's a newly elected mayor, she's got a perspective. She's lived there all of her life. She's a consumer. But what I found interesting, Aaron, was given all that, she's not in our industry, right? We get so caught up in people that are in our industry. But what about those who are consumers yet have to help sort of legislate or build relationships? And so I found both of those first to be very unique perspectives, something we haven't done, and just very welcoming conversations.
Another kind of key takeaway is how hungry both of them were for feedback, good or bad. They want to hear it. Now I'll put my councilman hat on here for a second too. You know, we want to hear from you. We do want to hear. And I know Karen has, she expressed a little bit of frustration that she doesn't ever hear from doctors. She hears plenty from her constituents, the voters, which is important, but doesn't actually hear from the healthcare industry themselves. You know, what could they be doing for the community, or what could the city be doing for them to help improve access to care? And I thought that was really interesting that, again, someone who's not in the industry, I kind of come from this tainted perspective of having spent most of my career in healthcare to be thinking about healthcare first. And she's not. That's not her job. She's never been in healthcare before. And yet this is something that is also on the forefront of her mind. So I thought that was, it shows that there's an issue there that needs to be addressed. And it's not just one level of government that is able or willing to address it. Kind of to your point, Jason, about hearing those 2 perspectives. I'm really hoping And spoiler alert for our listeners, I'm really hoping that we can get some additional perspectives out there. You know, we have a few requests out there. Hopefully they'll respond before the season's over. But I kind of like this outsider's perspective, mm-hmm. as you said, you know, those not in the industry and what they think about healthcare needs from a governance level.
The governance, that's interesting. Yes, exactly. But, and to hear her perspective when she came out into council, it was during, I believe it was during the pandemic.
We were sworn in 2 months before the pandemic hit.
So talk about timing, but as she mentioned, not just the timing of it, but she's a grandmother, right? She's been in Pooler all her life. And yet what I sensed from her perspective was a lot about access to care. Of mm-hmm. course, that's a common theme we all talk about to all the headlines. But from her perspective in terms of access, it was about relationships. As her very growing suburban town, relationships with the providers in the surrounding areas, the tertiary hospitals, and the relationships with those facilities, and just trying to open up that door of communication, felt like that's what she saw as the most pressing need, which I found to be, you know, somewhat alarming, yet I thought a great perspective. Again, we're so worried about other aspects. We talk about telehealth. We talk about all these other things. But to her, it was, we need to just extend the relationship out, you know, to the surrounding areas. And given her perspective, again, as a consumer, I think was very valuable to do that.
Yeah, no doubt. And kind of going back to Buddy, I think a lot of us grew up with Schoolhouse Rocks, right? Like, how is a bill written into law? And seeing how the process works at least a little bit. He peeled back the curtain and he talked about several bills, in fact. And what I found refreshing for one is that it wasn't the partisan politics, right? These bills all passed with huge bipartisan support, and we tend to get caught up in the partisanship of DC. And it was refreshing to see that there are good things that can be coming from DC with both sides of the aisle working together to make it happen. And he rightfully so had a lot of pride in that. Getting the Republicans and Democrats working together, that in and of itself is a feat. So it was nice and refreshing to hear that Washington's not at a complete standstill. There are still good things happening up there.
That's right. You know, and hopefully our listeners, as they saw this come across in the e-blast of social media, and they saw politicians, wait. These were not, I did not feel like at least political discussions whatsoever. It was insightful. Like you mentioned, you know, Congressman Carter talking about the More Transparency Act, the Saving Our Students and School Act. Those are not political topics. And mm-hmm. neither conversation felt political whatsoever. And so to talk about meaningful legislation that impacts all of us, and to your point, Schoolhouse Rock, that's actually good. How's that occur for those that maybe don't keep up with such? Yeah, great conversation. Great, insightful conversation.
Yeah. Okay, folks, we'll be right back with our news headlines.
Welcome back, everyone. We appreciate you joining us again. Next, let's talk about some recent headlines that are out there. Most recently, what caught my attention, Aaron, you and I have talked quite a bit over our various seasons here about disruptors, right? Yeah. And one of those we constantly read about and talked about was Best Buy. Well, unfortunately, we have recent layoff with Best Buy laying off the Geek Squad, the tech support employee portion of the company, to sort of help shift the focus a little bit more to healthcare. And the staffers recently released that just in the last few days. Unfortunately, you know, if you were part of the February earnings call, you may have gotten some hint into terms of the corporate redirection of resources. But when you hear that, after all the talk we've had about disruption, how do you feel about that, knowing what we're trying to get behind in terms of all these disruptors?
I was surprised. So don't think our listeners know this about me. At one time, I was on the Geek Squad. It shouldn't come as a surprise, really. But I worked for Best Buy. I worked for the Geek Squad many, many moons ago. In fact, it's been so long ago, when I first started working there, they were selling VHS tapes. So it's been a hot minute. And now Best Buy doesn't even sell DVDs. They made a big deal about that over the Christmas season in 2023. That was their last season of selling discs. They weren't buying anymore. And so every time you'd go into the Best Buy, there'd be fewer and fewer discs on the shelves, and now they're all completely gone. And so Best Buy is changing. And I think it was about 2 years ago when we first heard about this Best Buy Health initiative. And it was surprising, but now it's starting to make sense. So I'm still kind of baffled by this in some ways, but I don't know. It seems like everything has gone digital now. You know, computers are less virus prone, although we'll be talking about that here in a second. We're seeing a less of a need for physical media and physical presence for the electronic world. So it's not a surprise that Best Buy's trying to pivot into something that certainly we need physical interaction for, and that's healthcare.
Yeah, I'll be curious what that pivot looks like. They mentioned more focus and dedication towards areas like AI, which is an interesting take, right? And then, of course, they bet a lot early on, at home or in-home care via remote monitoring type of solutions. And so it'll be curious if they're projecting that further growth in 25. Is it going to be more in the AI development arena? Is it going to be more in the remote patient monitoring arena? What that's going to look like? But I guess more to come there. But yeah, little headline there to get us started as we talk, we kind of rehash some of this other disruption we've talked about previously.
And we're 15 months or so since the launch of OpenAI's ChatGPT 3.5, and then about a year out from version 4.0. So it'll be interesting to see how AI evolves alongside these other companies like Best Buy playing in this space. So there's certainly more to come on that regards. So pivoting off of that, getting rid of Geek Squad, more or less. So Geek Squad isn't gone. I want to make that clear. It's just there's massive layoffs within the Geek Squad. All the stores were slimming down the number of employees. If you don't know their shtick, it's all like spy stuff. So they call them agents. So massive layoffs across the company, which IT security and things like that are still really important, even amongst home users, which is what Geek Squad was aimed at. Not really business use, but certainly in all the headlines these days has been the Change Healthcare hack. We've heard about that. And shoot, you may be directly affected by the fact that Change Healthcare couldn't pay you. We have a lot of our clients, and I know a lot of our listeners were suffered greatly during that outage. But this came in across the news desk that there is another hacker group, a second group, who claims that they have 4 terabytes of Change's data, and they are currently reaching out to extort more money out of Change Healthcare. So that's interesting. Quarterly Change paid more than Change, about $22 million to the original hackers, the original ransomware gang. These other hackers, known as Ransom Hub, are demanding an unknown amount, or at least an undisclosed amount so far. And Jason, that shows that sometimes paying ransoms, and we hear about this, right? If you pay a ransom, you show that you're a mark. May not always be the best idea.
Yeah, well, it takes me back to one of our interviews earlier on with Sumitsu, I believe it was, where we talked about a lot of just sort of corporate security tackle and blocking, right? And, with this recent headline, looking at what the American Hospital Association recommends, again, it kind of goes back to some certain basics. So when I hear that, I think of a couple of things. One is what corporations should do regarding help desk security protocols. It also recommends initiating video calls, that, some of those ABCs that maybe we all forget as employees under those circumstances. But I tell you another aspect that I saw of it was just the financial strain it puts on vendors and providers, right? Physicians, for example, lots of them were having to take out lines of credit, you know, while there was payment stalls occurring while change went through this this situation. And so what that cascading effect is going to have, in particular on the smaller providers who were impacted, that's probably going to linger for quite a while. And so I'm sure we'll hear more about this, the financial downfall going into 25, 26, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Well, and think about, too, so you talked about lines of credit that folks had to open. I think we can think of a couple of our own clients who've had to resort to those sort of things. So there's fees and there's interest that they have to pay now simply just to keep their doors open while they're waiting for change. So I saw in passing, I haven't read that anything beyond the headline. It looks like the Senate is going to be calling United Health Group to a subcommittee to testify about this. So we should be hearing some more about what happened, what were the failures, what should they have done to protect things better. And that kind of pivots to another article, and you kind of hinted towards it there about how can people and what should organizations be doing to protect themselves. You know, obviously change stopped payments, and that can harm patients by vis-a-vis providers not being able to pay their bills and, you know, limiting access to care. But then what happens when the practice is hacked or the hospital is hacked? And so right now, the American Hospital Association is warning healthcare systems of all sizes that cyber criminals are specifically targeting IT help desks, pretending that they are finance employees so they can divert payments away. So Change Healthcare is just finally getting stood back up again. Payments are just starting to flow. Now there's this new threat that could further destabilize organizations. We're going to put this in the show notes so you can see what recommendations are being made here. But they seem to be relatively common sense, don't you think?
Yeah. In particular, you know, just to further add to a couple of your comments there as well, the claims that are still coming through, you know, I keep reading where while the majority of them, 90% or so, something along those lines are flowing through, they're still facing much, much higher 25 to 40% rejection rates, right? Mm-hmm. And so vendors have to adjust. New vendors are coming into the provider settings, and then the providers must adjust to those new vendors, and there's going to be claims issues. And so now you're putting just a bigger concern or workaround on the rev cycle portion of things. And so it kind of dwarfs the IT concerns as we start looking at the revenue cycle portion that's just going to continue to linger.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because the ONC, just the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, or ONC for short, they just put out a call for public feedback on their strategic plan. It's a 6-year strategic plan that's starting this year through 2023. And so it kind of in light of all the cyber crime that's going on, you have change, and then of course, these various and sundry attacks. We have this ONC strategic plan that says more IT, more interconnectedness, more of these good things, which they improve care, right? They improve care coordination, they improve outcomes. But we cannot stress enough, we cannot forget how critical it's going to be to have good security in place and excellent security practices. Mm-hmm. So this is the time to invest in IT security is before you're broken into, right? It's like buying locks, buying really good locks for your house. You buy them long before your house gets broken into. If your house is already broken into, who cares of what locks you had? So it's important to think about. We're getting more interconnected here. We need to be better about our IT security. And welcome back to the podcast. Jason, in this final segment here, I wanted to talk a little bit about the future, the future of this season, actually. We've heard a lot of feedback from y'all, and one of the things you'd like to be notified about is what our upcoming episodes are going to be. We have the privilege of interviewing some really great folks this season. So, Jason, why don't you let the audience know what our lineup looks like?
Yeah, I'm really excited about these next few episodes, just like the first couple. Next up is Dean Rodinghaus. Dean is Chief Clinical Officer for Cure Health and Infinity Care Partners. We just talked about AI. Well, what Dean's going to highlight for us is virtual smart care, in particular, how the AI platform that Cure Health has launched with Dean's assistance, in particular, as it relates to staff shortages and patient care. Great conversation we had around how to best assist with that staff shortage problem that we have in the care management function by utilizing their AI platform. So good stuff there with Dean. We then follow up, we'll have Matt Usher. Matt, you may recall we had on last season. We're going to do kind of a halftime report, if you will, on health plan assessment, right? Whether you're small business, medium-sized business, or what have you, that perspective, but also as an employee, just some what's happening, some trends, things he's seeing, some recommendations. Again, just a good halftime report by Matt. And then lastly, is Sherry Rosary and Kelly Mackin-Marble. We haven't had either one of those ladies as of yet. We met them in the Indiana market a few years ago. Well, these two very experienced, successful administrators also wrote a book. And so number one, we're going to talk to them in our first episode just about their experiences in the industry, right? And what they found as challenges, how the industry has changed. They have both been CEOs for numerous practices and successfully so, as well as orchestrating a merger between their practices. So we'll go and talk to them about their experience. But then the second portion of that is about their book, Two Rivers: The Power of Collaboration and Other Leadership Lessons. It's a very good book. Aaron and I, we've both have read it, as well as several others at SHP recommend you as well. So we're going to talk to them about their book. There's a very strong personal aspect of it as well. And so very exciting discussion then. More to come.
Looking forward to it. And like we teased in an earlier segment, we hopefully can get some other perspectives outside of the industry from the government perspective. So hopefully those are going to be able to pull through. It's been some scheduling conflicts, as you can imagine. Scheduling with elected officials can be a little difficult at times, but stay tuned there. I'm really looking forward to hearing all of these episodes. We haven't recorded them yet, so I don't know. I'm with the audience right now. I don't know what's gonna come. But yeah, I think this is gonna be a great season, Jason.
Oh, very excited. Like we said at the beginning, different format, different perspectives. And again, I just want to reiterate what you said earlier, Aaron. Please email us, contact us, however you see fit. Social media, we're active there. Let us know any other topics or subject matter experts you'd like to hear, and we would certainly line them up. But
Yeah.
love this season. I think we'll have a very exciting and insightful end to our season four.
Alrighty, folks. Well, thank you for joining us, and we will see you all next week.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, everybody.
This has been an episode of Beyond the Stethoscope: Vital Conversations with SHP. If you enjoyed this podcast, please be sure to rate and share it with your friends. It sure helps the show.
Production and editing by Nala Weed. Social media by Jeremy Miller.
And our co-hosts are me, Aaron C. Higgins, and Jason Crosby. Our show producers are Mike Scribner and John Crew.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
So, Jason, I have a question for you. What's your favorite Easter candy? We're just coming right out of Easter, and certainly... Oh. Certainly, there's
Yes.
there's the normal ones, there's the favorites, there's the jelly beans. What must you find in your Easter basket?
Oh, it's my wife and I put some aside. We've got two older kids. We still do the Easter basket thing for them, and so naturally, it's kind of like Halloween. We put some aside for mom and dad, right? It's without a doubt. Give me the eggs with good old peanut butter in the middle. Just chocolate covering, peanut butter. Keep it simple. That's my favorite. What
Well,
say
there you
you?
go. Oh, I like the original Cadbury eggs, and AKA the British ones. The American ones that are really made by Hershey's, not a fan of those. But there's a British pantry store not too far from my house, and they carry the real McCoys brought in from England to their little store here. And yeah, those are the real ones. That's where it's
I
at.
like that. That's original. That's original. Very respectful, but